Hi, I'm Zisi. I'm a student of Chassidus, aspiring to live a God-centered life while also mothering, staying present, and holding on to creativity and drive. Each month, I'll be exploring where these ideals meet through the lens of Hasidic thought. Let's probe the heights and return grounded as we navigate standing between earth and sky. This month, we'll be talking about who came first, the Torah or the Jewish people, and why that matters. The Zohar says, Yisrael of Ereisa v'kudshei b'ruchu chad hi, that the Jewish people, the Torah, and Hashem are all one. The Torah is a means to facilitate the relationship between God and the Jewish people. The Jewish people relate to Hashem through the Torah, and Hashem relates to us as well and creates an external relational connection to us through the Torah. So all of these three elements are bonded. And it's interesting because Chazal tell us and hint to this in a number of places that all of us, all of these three elements also precede creation. God obviously precedes creation because he always was. But we might think that the Torah or the Jewish people started when God decided to create the world. But there are various midrashim that hint to the fact that actually no, the Jewish people, the Torah, were around even before God created the world. It says, Istakal b'Ereisa bar Alma, that God looked into the Torah and he created the world, that he used the Torah as a blueprint for the world. So obviously that means that the Torah precedes the world. There's also a medrash in Rus that says, B'mi nimlach b'nishmaseyam shel tzadikim. And Chassidus references this phrase often and explains it as, with whom did God consult whether he should create a world or not? And when we go a little deeper, like, did God need someone's advice whether he should create a world? Obviously not. God is God. He knows. Hashem knows the reality. He doesn't need advice. But Chassidus explains that, what did God look to? Where was the motivation in creating the world? And it was b'nishmaseyam shel tzadikim, in the souls of tzadikim. And as we know, v'amich kulam tzadikim, your nation is all tzadikim. So what motivated God to create the world was the existence of Jewish souls. There is the Jew in the world. That is the motivation for creating the world. And so obviously, the Jew as well precedes the world. If the Jewish soul exists before the world exists, then we precede the world. So why are we exploring this in the first place? Why does it matter whether we precede the world or not? And why does it matter which one comes first, the Jew or the Torah? When we say that it comes first, when we say that we preceded creation, what that means is that within what precedes the creation lies the intention for creation, lies the purpose for creation. And so now we have to figure out, what was the purpose of creation? Was the purpose of creation the Torah, and therefore Jews were created in order to keep the Torah? Or is the purpose of creation for the Jewish people, and the Torah is given to guide the Jewish people? And the Medrash says that at the end of the day, who preceded who? Who came first? The Jewish people came first. That the ultimate purpose is for the Jewish people, that the purpose of creation is for the Jewish people to be fully expressed in this world, that the Jewish soul should be absolutely expressed in the body, that there should be this absolute aligned existence of Jew. That is God's purpose in creation. And sometimes as the neshama journeys down from heaven and comes into a body, and the body becomes our primary mode of consciousness, we sort of take things in from the outside in. So my body is my most external self, and therefore I'm processing the entire world through my most external self. That becomes my first filter of reality, of my perception of reality. And then it moves a little deeper into what we would call the nefesh habahamas, into the animal soul. And that becomes my second filter on reality. And finally, hidden deep within my animal soul is my godly soul. And so I can lose touch with that voice of my godly soul. And so God created the world for me, and that doesn't change regardless of how I'm acting or not. But at the end of the day, am I living out my deepest self? Am I experiencing my essential self, which is absolutely and totally united with Hashem? And Hashem wants a home for himself on earth. What that means is that Hashem wants me living with him. Hashem wants me living my ultimate, truest, essential godly reality. But I can forget what that godly reality is. So Hashem gives me the Torah. Hashem gives the Jewish people the Torah. And the Torah is the guide to getting in touch with myself. When I live aligned with the Torah teaches me, the Torah reminds me of who I am. That's why it's interesting. It says that every baby learns the entire Torah in utero, and then we forget it, and then we have to relearn it again. And the experience of learning Torah is, it's an experience of memory. It's an experience of resonance. It's something that's already within my soul. But I need to be able to allow my soul to communicate to me. And my method for doing that is through Torah study and then actual mitzvah observance, doing what the Torah tells me to do. And it says that when Mashiach comes, we're going to be in that ultimate state of Dira B'Tachtein, and that God is going to be completely at home on earth, which means God is going to be completely at home within every single one of us. It says, V'asu li migdash v'shachanti b'seicham, that we should dwell within them, within each and every single Jew. And when Mashiach comes, God will be within each and every Jew and be fully expressed within each and every Jew. And until it permeates out into our most external existence. So instead of outside in living, we'll be living inside out living. That my deepest self will be constantly expressed, that my body will be totally aligned with my deepest self. And that's why my Torah mitzvah observance will be absolutely perfect, because I will be in this state of synergy with my deepest self, which automatically means that I am observing what the Torah tells me to do and living in that Torah mindset, in that frame of mind. In that divine frame of mind. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about the fact that it says, when the Torah was given, it says, Kai Seymar LeBeis Yaakov. So you should say to Beis Yaakov, and Rashi emphasizes over there, Beis Yaakov Elu HaNashim, that the Jewish women received the Torah before the men. That Moshe told, when Moshe was teaching the Torah, the women went first. And I was thinking a little bit about how the construct of masculine and feminine that is set up in Hasidic and Kabbalistic thought. And there's this understanding that the male soul, and obviously these are very generalized descriptions, but the male soul is sourced in Za. Za is the six emotions. And the understanding of Za is that our emotions are what drive us to action. That when we want to get things done, we need to have some sort of emotional drive. Without emotional drive, we don't do things. When you're stuck in a very intellectual place, you don't actually do. Intellect doesn't drive action. We need some sense of emotion to actually attempt to do something. But from that emotional space, that's where we are going out and making change and conquering the world. And for thousands of years, that's sort of the operating system of the world, has been in this very conquering state. People conquering other people, people conquering other people's land. In general, what we aspire to is not just conquering over people, but also conquering things. We're constantly looking to get something. There's always something new. There's always this drive to have the latest, to have something new, to have more money, to have more fame, to have more respect. And even in a positive way, to constantly be growing and climbing and changing and in this very energetic state of reaching out and accomplishing. And I have my long list of things that I want to get done and checking them off and making sure that I am in that sort of movement all the time. And that's the movement of Za. And that's sort of where we've been throughout the Gullus and where we've needed to be, because there's something that had to get done in the world. But it says, when Mashiach comes, Ishas Chayel Ataras Baila, that the woman will become the crown of her husband. That when Mashiach comes, it will be feminine energy that is revealed to be the most essential. And what is the feminine energy? So if we just describe this masculine energy as conquering and getting things done, the feminine energy is the energy of Malchus, which is the energy of nurturing. It's very much connected to the earth, that the earth, you put in a seed, and the earth feeds the seed and allows for the seed to then express itself. And as we see in just the physical role of a woman, that the woman grows the baby. And when the woman is growing the baby, she's not actively doing anything to change who the baby is. She's just creating the most nurturing environment for the child to grow into itself. And in that, there is a certain presence. There is a certain, not a need to go out and get something done, but rather to recognize all the energy that is already here. All the beauty that is already here. Allowing what is to flourish. Allowing the inside to express. Sometimes when we're in a constant state of movement, it's hard to actually go deeper and see what's underneath that movement. We can use constant movement and constant drive and constant ambition to hide and to escape being in touch with what's underneath that. Sometimes when we're uncomfortable with our present reality, we find the need to constantly be pursuing something else so that we don't have to take the time to be present with that reality. But Malchus embraces the present moment, and Malchus embraces the present reality, brings out the best in the present reality. And Malchus means kingship. And what does the king wear? The king wears a crown. Keser represents desire and will. Presence is connected with desire and will. The highest point is expressed through the lowest point. Keser is expressed through the bottom of the spheros, which is Malchus. And that is because our desires and our truest will is not brought about through the conquering action, but after we conquer, to take some moments of presence. And to take the time to see, is what I am doing actually aligned with my deepest will? Is what I am doing actually aligned with my deepest desire? Or am I approaching this a little bit more externally? And probably it's not just about taking the time after, but actually taking the time before. Before I set out into the world with a mission, really strongly driven with a mission, to get things done, I need to take some time to go into that Malchus space. And check in. Is this aligned with the depth of the desire, with the depth of the truth, with the depth of my essential being, which is connected to God? And when Mashiach comes, we're going to live in a space where Malchus will be revealed to be higher on some level than that conquering motion, than that conquering movement. We'll be able to live, like I said earlier, that like the Jew will be fully expressed, that our deepest desires, which is our longing to be connected to Hashem and to live an entirely godly life, will be in the state of utmost expression. From our head to our toes, every single part of us will be proclaiming our essence. And we see a slow shift in the world towards maybe a little bit of a more mindful space. A little bit of less of an emphasis on the conquering and getting things done as we shift into this more Mashiachic space, as the light of Mashiach is entering into our world right now, where we get to experience this. And it's hard for us to think that, okay, when Mashiach comes, you know, the mission will be completed. The mission will be completed. And then you can be like, okay, so then what? What am I doing? What's the point? It's really difficult to live, to understand living without a mission, to living to just to be. I know for me, that makes me very uncomfortable. I like to have something that I'm focusing on, that I'm driving towards. But when I am living totally and completely aligned with God, then I don't need to be looking for something outside of myself to drive towards. Now I can be totally and absolutely comfortable just living in the current moment. So I was thinking that maybe when we receive the Torah, the women receive the Torah first. Because even though it is true that the Torah is sort of sometimes presented as a checklist of things that we need to do and things that we don't do, but the checklist is something that you're imposing upon yourself. I love checklists to the extent that sometimes at the end of the day, I add things to my checklist that I got done just so I can check them off, even if they weren't on it originally, just because there's something that feels good about, you know, checking something off of a list. But the most inherent things to me, I don't put on my checklist. I don't put on my checklist to say I love you to my children. That doesn't go on a checklist. That is just part of who I am. It doesn't need to be written down. It doesn't need to be actively pursued in that way. And so what if we shift our relationship with Torah? That it's not so much as a checklist as it is a guide to getting in touch with my deepest self. As it is a memory of who I am. Torah is the memory of who I am. Torah is the hint to me to what I can become if I just follow through. And how would my relationship with that change? How would I be engaging with the Torah in a different way if I wasn't viewing it as something that is imposed upon me? When Hashem gave us the luchos were not written with ink on paper, but they were engraved. The letters were engraved into the luchos. And that's because Torah is not something that's supposed to be imposed upon something else. It's supposed to be completely and totally one with me. And when I see that there are areas that I'm struggling, and there are areas that feel a little bit less like they are one with me, there's space to explore and think, why is this a struggle for me if I know that this is ultimately me? It doesn't mean that I should stop doing that, but maybe take that as a push to learn more, to explore more, to see why does this not feel aligned with myself? And maybe that requires peeling away a couple of layers of sediment that has developed over the years based on my life experiences that are stopping me from relating to this particular part of myself. This knowledge shifts my entire relationship with my Jewish observance from being something, like we said before, that can be feel like an imposition, that can feel almost like a competition. Can I be better than somebody else? How much better am I? How much better of a Jew am I than somebody else? How many more points do I have than somebody else? And when I realize that that's not what Torah is about, we strip that away. There's no element of competition. There's no element of even judgment on ourselves. It's not a feeling of like, oh, I didn't get this. I didn't do this the right way, and therefore I'm a terrible person. Instead, we're able to approach it with a certain compassion for ourselves and think, how much happier am I when I live aligned with my deepest self? How much more present in my life am I when I live aligned with my deepest self? How much more godly is my experience when I live aligned with my deepest self? And that invites a certain space of openness and a sense of freedom. That I am living my truest experience, that I am fulfilling my ultimate potential. Not that I am being squashed by a long list of rules that are dulling my personality, but that my personality is given its chance to ultimately shine, to shine in its brightest way. If you've ever seen somebody who's really, you see that they are experiencing their soul and living their life at its fullest potential. And you see the joy that comes with that and the lightness that comes with that. It's not a heavy experience and you don't have to take yourself too seriously, but at the same time, you know that I am a serious part of this world, that my existence really matters because I feel myself being aligned with the purpose of creation. And that the purpose of creation is just for me to be here in this world as a Jew. That is the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation is not for me to achieve perfection or to achieve something that's outside of myself. The purpose of creation is for me to be in touch with my deepest self. And this doesn't just apply to our mitzvah observance, but also in the way that we approach our Torah study. That when I learn, there's a space and that there's an openness that I am able to find a sense of resonance. That I'm able to connect to this idea of like memory. That it's bringing back something that I already know that's deep inside of me. And I think something else that's sort of important is seeking out the teachers that draw out that resonance. Exploring until we find those spaces where I really connect to the Torah study that I'm doing. They say that if you're going to exercise every day, you need to find a form of exercise that's enjoyable for you. How much more so with Torah study, which is so essential to our life as a Jew. It's our life force as a Jew is the Torah study. That I need to find Torah study that I enjoy, that resonates with me, that speaks to my curiosity, but even more so speaks to my sense of self, that speaks to my deepest godly identity. And it's sort of is cyclical, because I know for myself personally that when I am in that state of learning with this sense of openness and enjoyment and resonance, it impacts every single other part of my observance. And my observance feels so much more synchronized with who I am and so much less like an imposition. I find that even for certain things in my religious observance that I struggle with, I don't even have to learn about those specific things. If I'm struggling with a mitzvah, yes, it can be helpful to learn about that mitzvah, to learn about the inner layer, the depth of that mitzvah, and uncover what the importance of that mitzvah so that it could feel more aligned. But just when I'm in a learning space, when I'm in a Torah space, it doesn't matter what the mitzvah is, it automatically feels more in tune with who I am. Because I'm speaking the language of my soul, and I'm in a frame of mind of speaking the language of my soul, and I'm in a state of presence in my Judaism. And so Shavuos is really this opportunity to reevaluate where I'm standing with my relationship with Torah. Is this just some imposed checklist that something I feel like I need to do? I go to a shir here and there. I do my mitzvahs that I have to do, and I check them off on my list? Or is this an expression of who I am? And is this engraved completely into my being?